Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Most of us accumulate more than possessions over a lifetime. We collect memories, identities, ambitions, hobbies, family traditions, and sometimes a surprising number of kitchen gadgets. At some point, many women begin asking new questions, not just where they want to live, but how they want to live. What still belongs in this chapter of life? What no longer fits? And how do we create room for new possibilities without feeling overwhelmed by everything we've accumulated along the way? My guest today believes that downsizing isn't really about getting rid of things. It's about surrounding yourself with what supports your life now and creating space for what comes next. Whether you're planning a move, helping a parent, or simply looking around your home wondering where all this stuff came from, I think you'll find both practical ideas and thoughtful perspective in this conversation. Listen now to my conversation with Donna Barwald. There comes a point in life when many of us begin asking different questions. Not just, where do I live, but how do I want to live? For some women, that means considering a move. For others, it means simplifying, letting go of possessions that once felt important, releasing responsibilities that no longer fit, making room physically and emotionally for whatever comes next. Just a little spoiler alert. I did this about 10 years ago, so I'm going to enjoy this conversation. The challenge is that even when we're ready for a new chapter, decades of belongings, memories, family history, and practical decisions can make the process feel overwhelming. My guest today has spent years helping people navigate those transitions. As a professional organizer and author of Improve Your Move, How to Downsize with Ease and Move On to Your Next Adventure, she helps people move beyond the clutter and stress to create homes and lives that better fit who they are today. Donna Barwald, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here and happy to be on the journey with you.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this. What first drew you into helping people organize, downsize, navigate major life challenges or transitions rather?
I've been organizing for about 20 years, 25 years professionally. I've been organizing my whole life, but professionally, that's about it. And my clients have grown up with me. So years ago, when I was a young mom, mom of young kids, I wasn't young at the time, I was in my 40s. My clients were also moms of young kids. And then as we've developed, I now have two young adults and just started collecting Social Security. And so my friends are all there too. And so my clients just mirror my friends basically, and who I meet in my social circles. I get a lot of clients from the activities I do. I square dance. I'm taking a musical theater class, and I belong to a synagogue, which is where I used to get most of my clients. Anyway, so we're all at that stage, and most of them are, maybe a little bit ahead of me. But because my kids are still young and people my age have kids who are, my twin sister's a grandma already, let's put it that way. So in organizing people's homes, this is what they needed help with. And I learned early that people, even if they have all the time in the world to look through what they have and decide what fits them now, they don't. Case in point, the pandemic, everybody was home and still people didn't want to go through the downsizing. It was just too much. And I guess they were still cocooning, so they wanted to hold on, I guess, to what they had. But now people are ready to let go. And what's happening is everybody is moving around and people are going to visit their friends and their grandchildren. And then they see all these new ways of living and get excited. Ooh, I would like to be there. Then they come home and get very disturbed, distressed, because they can't get out fast enough. It's going to take forever to downsize now, and I'm going to lose the chance. And, I can't look for a new place until I know, what until I'm ready to go, and I'm not ready to go until I get rid of my stuff. And it's this whole big whirlwind in their mind, which is why I wrote the book. I'm like, here, if you want to move on to your next adventure, let's start now. Even if you don't know where you're going, or don't even have an idea that you are going, but statistically, eventually you'll be leaving your home. So let's start now and downsize. And then I'll teach you how to look around, find where you want to be, and do things in the right order so that you don't get so overwhelmed that you just give up. Because I don't want people to give up on opportunity, especially to be social since we were separated for so long because of the pandemic. I'm still in pandemic shock. In California, in Los Angeles, we were isolated, locked down more than anybody. And so everybody counts time now as, pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. And there was this 3 year period where we were, in limbo. And so even though we're this many years out from the pandemic, it's not that far out. And all of my friends and all and clients are coming to me saying, help.
I have a friend who has just moved from just east of LA, and they moved to LA just in the pandemic. And she says the exact same thing of like, oh my goodness, like she didn't have any opportunity to get her know her neighbors or join groups or any of those things that you would normally do to create a friend circle. Now, downsizing, most people think of that as just getting rid of stuff. But can you be a bit more specific about like what's downsizing really about?
It's actually about surrounding yourself with the things that suit your life now, not the life you had, not the life you wish you had, not even necessarily the life that you think you may have, although that's a good goal when you're determining what to let go of or what to hold on to. But you want a simpler life. Everybody needs to simplify. And there's things that are hidden in closets that you haven't seen in years that you may want to see. In fact, I was with a client yesterday, a very good friend, who was so sad that I was finding all these things in his closets that he barely remembered he had and didn't get a chance to use because now his wife has dementia and Alzheimer's and is living in a skilled nursing facility. And so that life that they imagined that they would have, they missed. They were too busy. And then they never took things out. And he had this whole retirement planned. And it looks extremely different than what he expected because his wife got sick. And so I want people to be able to enjoy what they have. I tell people, go shopping in your closets. Do it now and have fun with it because this is why you saved things all these years. This is the moment that you put this away 20 years ago. It was for today. And I want you to look at it, enjoy it. I actually unwrapped silver for them, a silver tea set that somebody had given them years ago. And they put it away very nicely, and they had caregivers in the home, so they hid it, so it would be safe. And I brought it out, and I unwrapped it, and I put it in a cabinet with a glass front so that they could see it. I'm like, if you're going to hold on to it, I want you to see it, not just know that you have it now. Enjoy what you have. And so I want you to surround yourself with the things that not only bring you joy, but represent who you are now. And they can also represent who you were. I'm not saying get rid of everything, but if you're not going to work every day in a suit and tie, why are the suits and ties cluttering your closet and you have no room to put your slacks and polo shirts that you're wearing now? And why would you keep all the relics of a past life that ceremoniously dumped you, say you were in the executive corporate world or something, and you got ceremoniously downsized without warning or wish, and it's still holding on to remnants of that life that doesn't define you and it doesn't define who you are now. And if it doesn't suit you, and if you don't have space for it, and it's taking up the space that something that suits you now needs, for example, your golf clubs, you might as well get rid of the things that just aren't your life anymore. And when I say get rid of, I don't mean throw out, and I don't mean necessarily donate or sell. But if you kept things because you wanted to pass them on to your kids, give them to them now because you need the space. You need to be able to travel light. You're the one who held on to everything while they were establishing themselves. Now they can take their things and some of yours so that you can easily move when the need or wish arises.
Okay, and I just need to say right up front here, if anybody's listening to here today and I have told you that if you haven't opened that box for 2, 3 years, just get rid of it, don't open it. Apparently I'm wrong.
Well,
Ah, dear.
you never know because those boxes are called doom boxes. With doom is didn't open, only moved.
Oh, there we
D-O-O-M.
go. Okay, I gotta
Didn't
remember that
open or
one.
didn't organize or didn't organize, only moved. Either way, they're when you're moving and you just shove things in boxes and you seal it up and then you never get around to unopening it. And it could be a treasure. You never know. And you probably have forgotten. I would never throw out a box without opening it, only because if there's something in there that's valuable now, you'll feel really silly that the garbage man got the silver and you missed it. And especially if it came from your parents' house, because you don't know where things were hidden. You can't ever just get rid of things. You have to go through everything very thoroughly because people are clever about hiding money. I tell people whenever they organize, it pays for itself if they hire me because they'll find money, and they always do. But no, people will hide money. Silver is at an all-time high, even if it's broken jewelry. I think it's selling at $70 US dollars now, as of yesterday or something, spot price. So an ounce. So that's important. You don't want to just give away things because you don't want to open them. But if you have an idea that these are your divorce papers and the divorce brings back terrible memories, you don't have to open that. You don't have to shred it. You don't have to just throw that away because you don't want the negative emotions surrounding you when you go through your things. And so when you decide to downsize, I want you to look at the things that are emotion neutral first, because that often just stops people in their tracks. And then they can't do anymore. And because they get flooded with upset, sadness, rage, disappointment, frustration, whatever, all those negative emotions, you want to downsize things that don't have the negative emotions, but you absolutely want to get to those and get rid of them. You don't want to keep anything around that has that because when you look at it, why look at it something that's going to make you upset? I spent too much money on this. That was a gift from a friend who betrayed me. This, whatever the thing is, if it brings up something negative, you really don't want it. Because everything speaks to you when you look at it, and you want it speaking to you. You want to smile when you look at your things and not feel bad. But if you start with the things that make you feel bad and have to delve into them, usually papers, I would always do papers last because that stuff just derails you. And it looks, you could be going through papers all day and it looks like you didn't do anything. And you need that little dopamine hit of success, those quick wins to keep you going, because this is a very emotional and exhausting, physically and emotionally experience.
You started talking about your circle at the beginning, and the emotion there was a bit of overwhelm because suddenly they've found where they want to be and what they want to be. But now there's all this stuff to deal with first. You talked about the gentleman who it created sadness. At what point in time does it go from I won't say necessarily negative emotions, but those emotions that are more emotional, to the tipping point where, like, where's the tipping point into they can see their next life, they can see where they're going and feel that now it's reachable.
If you're in the middle of something that's happened, of some traumatic event, your wife is declining and you can't see past it, and you're in the thick of things, that's not the time, obviously, to go through anything. You're just surviving. When that crisis is past and she's moved to where she's going to be living, and you have a routine going, and now you're coming back to an empty house, and that empty house only reminds you that she's not there. Then you want to sort of redo the house so it doesn't look like it did when she was there. So it doesn't feel like she's the thing missing, if that makes sense. And I'm not saying get rid of every trace of her. I'm saying, put things away, if you can't deal with them yet. But bring out the things that are going to make you happy. You never had space for your hobby before, and now nobody's at home to bother you. And you can sit at the dining room table and sew. Okay, now let's create a sewing room. Or now let's create a studio or create a exercise space. You want to define the room, each room that you live in, so that it has a purpose. And that purpose should be things that you enjoy or that are necessary, but that are your own space, especially if you've lost your spouse, roommate, person who was living with you. So you don't feel their absence. You just feel like you're in a new place, even if you can't physically move out of this space and into, a new home. Your home wants to feel different.
Where is the greater struggle? Is it the practical or the emotional?
If you have ADHD, the greater struggle is the practical, because you just can't get it together without help or somebody there to body double you, which I always recommend. People, boomers, we weren't diagnosed with ADHD. It wasn't a thing, right? And even our kids, they denied that it was a thing. So it's that recent that there's all this attention and research being done about ADHD. But what I've recently discovered, so strange, I actually have ADHD. I didn't think I did, because one of the hallmarks is the executive function skills, which are organizing and planning and initiating and all these sorting and all these kinds of things that organizers have, but people with ADHD don't. And I thought, well, I can't be ADHD because I have that. But ADHD people also have their special interests and a little bit sometimes of OCD. And I think that's why I felt the need early on to organize. I needed to keep control over what was going on. I had no control over anything in my tiny house where I grew up. And so I would organize things. I'd get up early in the morning and rearrange the kitchen, or go lock myself in the bathroom and clean under the sink, only so that I could have some sort of control over something, because I needed things a certain way for me to not feel helpless, I guess, or angry, or all these emotions that come up when you're ADHD. And anyway, if you're ADHD, it's really hard to do it without somebody. And so a body double is just a friend or paid aid or something, somebody to sit with you while you do what you need to do. They may not be the best people, though, if you're trying to declutter, because unless they know very non-judgmental methods that I use, and the way to gently ease you along, they may make it worse. You don't need anybody saying, "What do you need that for? You don't need that. Just throw it away." Or, "This is terrible." Or, "The stuff your kids say to you." You don't need that. And that's why people actually hire professional organizers, because they help. But if you're just going through papers, there's nothing anybody has to say. But to keep you there and engaged, it's nice to have somebody just sitting with you, while you do the things that you want to do, or go through your kitchen cabinets and find all the sets of measuring cups that you have, and then decide which of the eight you're going to keep. And I never make anybody get rid of anything. The goal when you declutter or downsize is to just reduce. That's it. Keep the best, reduce the rest. And I'm not telling you how much that number is. It depends on how much space you have and what you think. You know, everybody's got their own limit.
My last big move, the kitchen was the big place for me because I do accumulate, like the small tools and stuff like that. And I was really brutal and I went, okay, actually, I will never use that again. I can buy a loaf of bread. I don't need the bread, like all that sort of stuff. And so I packed up everything I knew I wanted, labeled the boxes, texted my two daughters, and said, come on over. If it's still in the kitchen, you can have it if you want it. And if you leave, when you leave here, everything that re remains will be donated. And so it worked really well because, like every once in a while now, I still get it. Well, do you want that back, Mom? No, thank you.
Really,
So,
I'll come visit it at your
yeah,
house. That's
exactly.
the thing. You know, when your kids come to visit is a great time to declutter. Basically, if you don't have time to just go through things with them, just tell them you're not leaving empty-handed. I've made a pile of things I think you'd want. Look through them and take them, please. Or I will get rid of. Yeah, now's the time. Now's the time for them to start filling their homes. And a lot of people keep things because they think their kids are going to want them. And then they find out, no, mom, we don't want the 12-piece china that you can't put in the dishwasher. And I don't care how much it costs. And I know it was a gift for your wedding, but we're not using it. And now you have permission to go sell that or donate that or give it to friends or have a dinner party and have everybody take home their own poinsettia to remember you by or whatever it. Whatever it's necessary, but your cabinets, you'll never have enough in your kitchen, right? You never have enough cabinets. And I guarantee there are things that are sitting out on counters or big packages of things coming home from, I don't know if you have Costco where you are, but there's Costco and Walmart and all the big packages, right? And they sit out because the cupboards are full of everything else, but the everything else isn't being used, and you want to fill the cupboards with things that you actually use because having visual clutter is stressful, physically stressful. It brings on the cortisol, the stress hormone. I write about this in my first book. This mess is making me stress about the relationship with clutter and stress. And it's not your imagination, but it actually, and clutter in your kitchen makes you eat more. There was a study, which
Oh.
really funny. People ate more cookies in a cluttered kitchen. I
Oh,
thought that
isn't that
was
funny?
interesting.
Yeah.
So it behooves you if you've got, your kitchen bursting from the seams and your counters are full, you might as well put things away and in the place of the things that are in the cupboards not being used. And that's the easiest thing to do. Do kitchens and bathrooms first.
I remember the last home that I owned. I had an office space, and I was also fundraising chair for Special O. And once a year, we'd have the big banquet and big donations, and everything. It was just, I ended up collecting all of these wonderful donations from all the fabulous businesses in town, and I reached a stage where my office was like a. I just was so tense every time I went in. And then finally the weekend of the big banquet came and, my friends showed up. We took everything over to the banquet hall and I walked into my office and it was just like, oh, the shoulders came down and everything else. And I realized that it was because of the clutter that is not my style. And yeah, it was so stressful.
There's a reason people like hotel rooms because they're empty. That's why people love the ease. When you walk into a hotel room and it feels good, the air feels good and different, the energy is different. It's because there's nothing there blocking the energy to move around. And that's what happens with a cluttered home. And you don't realize it. And it's really hard to describe to people until you've had that feeling. There's a story, there's a Jewish folk tale about somebody who thought that their house was too small. And they went to the rabbi, and the rabbi, "What do I do?" And he says, "Bring the cow inside, and then bring the chickens inside, and then bring your neighbor's horse inside." Whatever. You're stuffing your house full of things until you are going crazy. They go back to the rabbi, and they say, "Now what?" He says, "Now take this out, take that out, take that out." All of a sudden, they're back to where they started. And it's heaven. It's all a matter of perspective. But literally, the less you have visually cluttering your space, the better. And I'm not saying be a minimalist, but if it's going to be there, it needs to be have the intent of being there. Sometimes the clutter is things that you brought into the house from your last shopping trip, and you have to return, and you never returned, and it's sitting there. And you become clutter blind. You don't even know notice it anymore, because you could just come straight in and do your business, right? And what the first thing I do sometimes when I walk into people's houses, I start with things that are in the entry, because I say, is there a reason this is here? I want to understand like how they live, because that helps me organize a system for them, and a drop zone if necessary. And sometimes they would look at me going, "I didn't even know about that. When did that get here?" Then they realize, "Oh, maybe that was like 15 years ago and I completely forgot about it." And that's the kind of stuff, when you empty it out, all of a sudden your house feels huge, because there's just not, this extra things. And if you can eliminate things on the floor and put them up on shelves, in cabinets, on the walls, or whatever, that also gives you this freedom that it's hard to describe unless you've had it. It's like being in love. How do you describe what that feels like? But once you have been there, and it's something to go for, that you want to attain. It's a state of the bliss that you want to be in. And I'm telling you, when your house is uncluttered, or your space, your office, wherever you're in, or everything that is there is placed there because you intentionally put it there and love it, and it makes you happy to look at it, then your mind is at ease and everything else gets easier. Decisions get easier. You can't make decisions in a cluttered space, which is why it's so hard to declutter. Because what else is decluttering but deciding, keep or let go? And if you can't physically make a decision, nobody can. It's not your failing. That's human nature. That's how we're wired. Then, if you have to make decluttering decisions, it's best to cover most clutter, or bring a box of something into another room that's uncluttered, and then make those decisions. Because you really can't make a decision when your mind is just can't settle down on one thing, because there's so many different things to look at, if that makes sense.
And it's like the old story of, I remember the very first house that my former husband and I bought. It had like the old cook stove in it. It was an older home, had the old cook stove, and of course now it was like newer appliances, but there was still the pie plate on the wall that where the pipe had gone in for exhausting from the We got used to the pie plate on the wall for the longest time. It was like years later, we suddenly went, wait a minute, we were going to fix that like as soon as we moved in the house, and we didn't do that. Has there been anything that, like, something really strange or unusual, weird, whatever, you give me the adjective, that somebody has absolutely refused to part with that you just didn't get?
Wow, that's a good question. No, actually, everybody has a reason, and the more I work with somebody, I mean, the more I understand them, so I understand the reason. And I'm trying to think of why anybody would want, or what somebody would want to have held on to. I guess there are papers that people hold on to that I know that
Oh,
they
okay.
have to. And I'm like, okay, if this makes you happy, but it's really not necessary. There's very little paper actually that you still need to hold on to. I have a list of things in my books about how long you have to keep, certain paperwork. And I tell people to make a binder ahead of time. I mean, or, while I'm working with them, of all their important things. It's, if somebody else has to run your life, or somebody has to put you in an ambulance and go to the hospital with you. And then answer all the questions and you're incapacitated or whatever. All of that stuff needs to be in a binder. But most people keep papers way too long or much. That's the biggest thing. And they don't believe me when I tell them. And certain things you don't have to shred. You really don't. And people think that they have to shred things. I have a client now actually, who doesn't want to harm the environment and is very careful to not throw anything away, like use as little stuff in the garbage as possible. So she spends a lot of time ripping out staples from the papers and that she was going through and things like that. That was For me, when you're 80 something years old and you have to move to New York next week, throw it all in the trash. I don't care. I'm sorry. I don't. If or in the recycle and let them worry about the staples. You know what I mean? It's like that doesn't make sense to spend all your life, all your time worrying about that. It just that was hard. That was hard to deal with because I could see that she was going to run out of time.
Could that have been, was that about her personality, or was that a procrastination thing because that big move to New York was going to be scary or
I think it was
change?
probably an OCD thing.
Okay.
I mean, she came from a different culture, that's one, but it's also, I think, an OCD thing. And that was really important to her. Yeah, but it was expensive, but I'll if you want to pay for me to rip off staples, I will be happy to do that, but I, think I could be better used somewhere else, but okay.
Is there a difference between preserving memories and preserving objects?
Yes. Because a lot of people keep things from their parents because it's from my mother, it's a memory. Right. But everything is from their mother. And it's like, is this one thing going to remind you of your mom more than this small thing that you see every day? You know what I mean? It's like, if this doesn't do anything but remind you of your mother because it was hers, then that's not necessarily something that you want to hold on to. Because you can accomplish that memory of mom by something smaller that's not going to take up space or cost a lot to move across the country or whatever. But memories are great, but most people never go back through them, and this is the problem. It's like if you're going to keep things for memories, then plan on every year on whatever holiday or your birthday or Mother's Day or whatever, to go back through these things and enjoy them and then share them with your children. Because if your kids don't know what's important to you and why, they're going to just throw it away when you die and you're going to be, obviously you wouldn't know, but if you did know, you'd be beyond upset that you held on to it all those years and your kids just had no regard and threw it away. And a lot of people hold on to things because they were their moms. But they don't realize that it didn't mean anything at all to their mom. If your mom is like you and hasn't ever decluttered and just moved things from house to house her whole life, and then she's gone and left it for you to clean out her house, you would know what actually means something to her. I have a story about somebody who had some tchotchka in their china cabinet, and their grandmother's sister came by and saw this and said, why do you have this? And she goes, because it was grandma's. She goes, she hated that. She only kept that out when her mother-in-law came to visit. So because her mother gave it to her mother-in-law gave it to her as a gift. She hated it. It's ugly. I'm sure you don't like it. You're free to get rid of it. You know what I mean? So if you're going to hold on to things because of the memories, then write the memories down. At least tell them to your children, so that they understand. I hold on to napkin rings. This one napkin ring, it has napkin rings are small, they fit in a drawer. I happen to like napkin rings. But I have this one that was from a set that almost burned our house down. There's a whole story. And so I keep that because that's the story. And all I have to do is look at that napkin ring and I understand. I also have a napkin ring that's monogrammed with my great grandmother's initials. I don't know the story, but I know GD is Gisella Dreyfus, and that's her. That must have been maybe a wedding present or something. It's tiny. I don't, it doesn't take up space. I'm allowed to keep that. But I also have a note written with it in the drawer that says, this was my great. So people know, because when you start cleaning out your mother's house, you're like, the worst thing is that when you have to put your parents in a place, or you lose them, and you're now cleaning out their home, and you're grieving, and you're cursing them at the same time, because you're thinking, why did they leave me with all this? And why did they keep all this? And what in the world are they doing with this? At that point, that's when you want to see the paper that has the story. So now you know, and you can laugh and relieve some of that tension.
I have a page on my website that is actually stories my mother told me. And because that way you can get rid of all the clutter, except, and the photographs are there. But it's also been occurring to me lately that I should create my stories for my grandchildren, because like nobody wants my stuff, and I know that. And let's go to the family and stuff now. I have the china from my mother, and both my girls are quite crafty. So I've said, I know you don't want it. Please don't put it in the landfill, but break it up and make like you've seen like the side tables where you can put it in epoxy or I don't know whatever it is. You can take the teacups and make bird food things, bird seed
Or
holders, and
I just saw somebody who made wind chimes out of teapots,
oh,
which were
okay, so perfect. Yeah,
very
yeah.
cute, and with
So.
and teacups and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead and break all that stuff and but just use it. Just don't get it in the landfill. And then I've got heavy oak dining room antique sideboards and things like that. And I've said either take them and paint them in wild colors that do suit what you want, or find a woodworker who will take them apart and at least use the oak, like something. Like I'm
Yeah,
just really just
exactly.
don't want any. I understand they don't want anything, but I just don't want that stuff to end up in the landfill. It's just too much indignity.
It's true, yeah. And it's hard to get rid of. Sideboards and hutches are the
Yeah.
and china cabinets, thing of the past and the hardest thing in the world. And you can't really, I mean, even if you gave them away, it costs a lot to move them. I'm trying to sell one for my client right now that's gorgeous, but it's 72 inches wide, takes up a whole wall, 6 feet. And it's got glass cabinets and it's just incredible. And everybody says, oh, this is gorgeous. And nobody is, I mean, it's down to, $500 and nobody's biting.
Yeah,
And
wow.
I fear that it's going to go to nothing and I'd still have to pay somebody to take it away. So that's the sad part with the beautiful antiques. But
Yeah.
oak is, like Belgian oak, I have some things like that. Really light, very nice and light and portable. So people need
Not
to
my
know.
stuff.
So people need to. So if you're trying to sell things, you tell them. If it is light, you tell them it was made to move. People didn't have cranes and trucks, so
Yeah. So, how do families have those honest conversations about belongings? Like we're sort of to a certain extent, a sandwich generation where some of us still have parents that are alive and think their stuff is just so valuable. But then our kids also don't want our stuff either.
The beautiful thing, that sounded funny. The beautiful thing. The beautiful thing now is you can find out the value of things easily. And anything that you think is valuable, you take your cell phone and you use Google Lens, and it'll at least bring up what other people are trying to sell it for, so you can get an idea of what is possible. And then if you use things like Curio, an app that I'm using now to tell me about antiques, it'll give you a range of like what they've sold for. So, and you can look at auction results and things like that. And so you know how much something, actually is, because everybody saved everything. Like the Cabbage Patch doll. My mother-in-law saved a Cabbage Patch doll. This is going to be for my grandchildren. It's going to be worth something, whatever. By the time it got to our house, the box was damaged already. So it's not worth anything, basically. I mean, hardly anything. It's not anything huge to speak of. And so you need to, if you think something is worth something, it's easy to find out. And you can get online appraisals. You can send a picture to an auction house. There's an auction house by us called Heritage Auctions. It's all over the United States. They have offices. And you can send a picture and a description, and they'll tell you if it's worth anything. And that kind of stuff. So if that's why you're keeping it, because it's worth something, find out. Silver plate is not worth anything. And baby boomers are glutting the market now with all of not only their stuff, but their gr parents and grandparents' stuff. Because they're the ones who held on to everything, right? The daughters get it from, the passed down from grandmother to mother to daughter to me. And I'm busy looking up what's silver and what's silver plate. Silver is valuable. Silver plate, not so much. Pretty. If you're not using it and you don't want to clean the tarnish, if as long as you establish that it's silver plate, you could sell it in an estate sale or something for, maybe $50, $30 to $50 kind of thing. But it's, and it'll make you some money, at an estate sale. At a garage sale, it won't. At an indoor estate sale, it might, and it may not. That's just the way it is. But don't keep things just because you think they're valuable unless you actually know that they're valuable. And then have a way and a method. If you want to really help your kids, tell them this is what you do in order to sell this. If you get appraisals now, if you don't want to burden them with the appraisals, and all of that kind of stuff. So that makes it easier to sell if they're going to sell, if that's why you're keeping it. But like baseball cards, billions of baseball cards, go through all those decks of baseball cards and figure out which ones were valuable, because I guarantee your kids are not going to. They're going to give them all away. And unless you've got somebody who's into baseball cards, but they may not be in your hobby, and then they're going to give them all away, and that's it. My husband just sold, I'm horrified. Just turned in his silver dollars, but he didn't know what the value of silver was. And they were real silver dollars. And I'm like, oh, I wish he would have asked me, because I know these things now. And I don't know, I wasn't involved. I don't know how much he got for them. But the coin collections, the coin collections are probably more valuable for their silver value than they are for the actual rare coins. But it's easy to find things out, so
And I've
you,
heard that stamp collections are worth basically nothing. So,
a fun hobby.
yeah.
Mail, what's that?
Yeah, right.
We used to have to write things and lick
Yeah,
envelopes and stamps and, yeah.
right. So 10 years ago is when I sold my last house. I was brutal in air quotes and got rid of things that had all sorts of, like memorabilia kind of things and collections that I was so proud of and stuff like that. I sit here 10 years later, and unless somebody reminds me, I have totally forgotten about it and I don't miss any of it. Is that
Good.
common, or like when people
Well,
part?
I don't often get to talk to people after they've downsized.
Okay.
Just because my clients are that age and that's the way
Yeah.
they are. But I'm glad to hear that because I hate for people to have the regrets, because that's why everybody holds on to everything. Because the idea that they're going to regret throwing something out is paralyzing. That they're going to throw out something that they would have wanted. But you have to also weigh the cost to your mental health and the cost to storage and all of that kind of stuff. The thing that I would regret more is keeping things in a storage unit that I have to pay for, because you will never recoup your costs. I had a friend and client who sold their house before the pandemic, so I don't know, but maybe not yet 10 years ago, somewhere between 6 and 10 years ago, right? And they put this Belgian oak that I was talking about, this Belgian oak table, chairs, and a hutch in it because it wasn't going to fit into their new place. And they were going to deal with selling it later. And they forgot about it because they have ADHD. And I forgot about it because I move on to the next thing. And I started getting calls from the storage unit because they had to change their credit card. And so now the credit card that was paying automatically every month wasn't working. And the storage unit was calling me because I guess I was there at the time when he put it into the storage unit. So they had my number. And I realized that he'd been paying all these years on this thing. And then they were going to throw it away, and he couldn't bear to have it thrown away. And I said, "You can bring it to my garage." And so I'm using the table. The chairs are in the garage, and the china cabinet's in the garage. And I can maybe sell the china cabinet for $200, but he's already paid, I don't know, m more than $1,000 of just storage fees for all those years that we forgot about it. So it's not ever going to pay for itself. And I'm using it because I need it for things that I'm selling for other people now. And I have it's storage. You know,
Sorting table.
if you're going to keep anything, you keep the storage because you need something to store things in. But yeah, there's no way you ever get back what you've paid for in fees. So you might as well just give it up now. It'll cost you less in the long run. I mean,
In
don't.
my own defense, I'm currently, well, next year I want to do some traveling, depending on what happens with the world. And my last permanent abode sold suddenly with a 28-day closing. So I didn't want to sign a lease that quickly. So I put everything in storage. And I once again, I was brutal. That's when I phoned my daughters and said, "Come and clean out the kitchen because it's going to the thrift store." And so, yeah, I am paying on a storage locker because within the next couple of years, I will have a permanent place again, and I like my stuff. So for me, given the price, it's not that much money, it's worth it. So, but yeah, I agree in terms of, oh, I've just got too much stuff for my house, so let's put it in storage where I will forget about it. Then yeah,
Well,
that's just not a good idea.
a lot of times when people's parents die and you can't deal with anything because you're in grief and there's just too much else to have to deal with logistically, in closing up their estate, people often just have to clear out the house because they want to rent it right away and they never go through their things. And that's what's sitting there in the storage unit. At that point, I understand a year, maybe two. But after that, you really w will regret keeping it and not going through it and making time to go through it and get rid of things. Because even if there is something of total value that you have to have, you can have it in a smaller space and you don't have to pay as much. You know what I mean? Because if you were in a rush and just moved everything out, I guarantee and I hope that that garbage, real garbage, didn't go with it. Because a lot of times when you have movers come, they like put the garbage in. Anyway, and you never unpack a box, and that's what it is. But no, seriously, that's really the only time that I would say. But I have a friend, if she hears this, she will be embarrassed, who thought she was putting her house on the market. at least during the pandemic, if not before. So that's at least 3 years ago, if not more. And so she put a lot of stuff into a pod. And a pod has been sitting wherever it's been sitting in its pod space. And they decided long ago that they weren't selling, but they never brought the pod back. And every year, I mean, not every year, every month, I bug her. When are we clearing out the pod? Because you know that she hasn't missed anything. She's probably bought duplicates of anything that she didn't have that were sitting there in the pod. And so I'm trying to convince her to go have an estate sale at an empty home that she has, so that she'll have motivation to clear out that pod, because that is really can eat up your money, and there's really no time. But if you don't think you can get rid of something, and it's and you think you're going to regret, maybe you want to spend a little bit, put it away in a pod, put it in a storage unit, something. Just see. And if after 6 months you haven't regretted it, then I would get rid of it. Because that regret is, it really is paralyzing. People just think. And if you live in a remote place, I learned this with a friend of mine who was living in Colorado. She couldn't just order anything on Amazon and have it show up. I mean, it, she was in such a remote place that it took things a long time to get to her. And so if she decluttered something, she was scared that if she got rid of something and then she needed it again, she wasn't going to have it. If that's the case, okay, I understand. But if you can buy it on Amazon and get it in 2 days or less, or it's less than $20 and you're not, you know, living hand to mouth, and you've got, you know, a little bit of disposable income, then I would say it's worth it for the peace of mind to declutter, and live with just what you need, because chances are you're going to forget you have it anyway, and you're going to go out and buy it when you need it. People do. That's why I find, you know, 10 flashlights, and kid you not, I maybe it was 20 flashlights of some body who couldn't ever find anything when they needed it, so they would go out and buy it again, and there's billions of them. And if that happens to you, then I would say to you, store things where you use them so that you will always know where they are, and that you won't leave them in another room and not be able to find it later. That's the other thing. I mean, that's the easiest thing is store. If you are always opening Amazon packages in the front room, then that's where you keep the scissors or the knife or whatever that you use. And that way you always know where your scissors are, and you don't go raid your good sewing scissors to open a Amazon box.
Okay, let's talk to our listeners for a minute. There's a listener out there who knows they should start, but the whole concept feels overwhelming. What's something that they could do today and tomorrow?
Go into your bathroom, go into your shower, and get rid of all the bottles that are things that you don't use every day anymore. They're empty, or you switched brands, or they were for your, you know, daughter who was visiting and she's not here anymore, or whatever it is. Cleaning out the shower is really empowering, and I'll tell you why. And do it while you're in the shower. I always tell people, start there, because there's something about running water that lifts your spirits. And there's really some sort of science magic about negative ions and all this. I can't tell you exactly, but it actually does change things. Okay. So, and when you have a tidy shower, and that's usually like the first place people go in the morning, then it makes you happy and you feel at ease, right? There's no aggravation. You're not like trying hard to get the last pump out of a, or the last squeeze out of a bottle. You give it up. Life's too short. You know, your hands hurt if you do that. So don't, and clear that out. Okay. Now you're looking for a towel. Okay. So you always pick your favorites. Everybody always picks their favorites. It's just what they do. These days, people love big, cushy towels. The little things that we used to keep out, you know, for guests or whatever. Nobody likes those little ones anymore, and you probably still have them. So Pick your favorite towels and reduce the rest. If you're living by yourself, you don't need 30 towels. I just did this with my friend last night. I had him go through all the towels, and he was shocked. He's like, "That's where all the towels were?" He didn't even know where his towels were, because he, whatever. Anyway, because his housekeeper puts them where they put them, and he only had a few for his bathroom, and he was using the same bare thread ones over and over again. Anyway, so now you've picked your favorite towels. Okay, now you're putting on your makeup, and in your makeup are, I just did this before I came on with you today. I was doing my makeup, and there are five different kinds of things for your foundation. Well, one, this is light. This isn't even mine. What is this here for? Throw it away. You know, this thing is old. This one is not good for mature skin. You pick your favorites. You're always going to pick your favorites no matter what you do all day. So in your normal routine, you start building your decluttering muscles by just picking your favorites, which you're going to do anyway. And then if you're never going to pick this because you're always picking your favorite, your coffee mug, for example, you know, we don't like the little ones anymore. We like the big ones, and we like the ones that have a handle that feels like this. And, you know, or whatever. Everybody's got their favorites. Those are the ones you keep. And then you keep a backup for your from your favorite, you know, what fits easily and nicely in your cabinet. Because if it fits easily and nicely, you're going to put it away. If it's a pain to put away, you're not going to put it away. And the dishwasher doesn't get emptied, and the counters don't get cleared. Right? And the towels don't get put away because, you know, the stack you have to manipulate to fit into the closet. If you have to do that, it's too much. That's too much. So pick your favorites and get rid of the ones that are threadbare. You deserve nice things. At this age, you should only have the best. Yes, it's functional. Sure. And yes, somebody can use it. The shelter down the street with the for the animals or whatever it is. Yes, somebody can use it, but you deserve nice things. Keep the nice things now. If you've still got plastic on your couch, rip it off. This is the time to have it. If you've not been using your china and you use the drips and drabs of the pieces that didn't break when your kids were little, you use the good china because even if they break, you've still got eight more play settings. You know what I mean? Now's the time. If you don't do it now, use the good crystal. It doesn't matter if it breaks, there's still more. And thrift stores and estate sales are full of replacements. So even if you break one of yours and you want to find your pattern again, I guarantee it won't cost very much and you can get it easily. So now's the time to use the good stuff, and it's the ordinary things that you're not using. Treat yourself. If you start doing that on a regular basis with the things in your daily routine, especially in the bathroom and the kitchen, that's the easiest places. Those are the two easiest places to start. That's where you want to do it. And then every day you put into your schedule what you're going to declutter next. I don't want you to think about it because in the time it takes you to think about what to do next, that 15 minutes is gone. So you can start with one drawer in one room, on one piece of furniture or whatever, or one bank of drawers. And each day you just go through the drawer, see if there's anything you can pull out. Anything, I guarantee there will be. And it doesn't have to be exhaustive because it's not just a one-time thing. Decluttering and organizing is a healthy habit that you do for your mental health every day, like exercising. You know, it's continual. And every time you buy something new, it's because you liked it better than the thing you had. So when you go to put it away, like your tablecloths in the tablecloth the cabinet, instead of stuffing the old ones to the back, take it out and donate it. Keep a donate bag or box by your front door so that, or in a closet that you can always just open the closet and dump it in. As you go about your daily routine every day, you're getting dressed. And you tried on some underwear and, or underwear, I guess you wouldn't donate, but you tried on something that doesn't look right on you. It feels itchy, whatever. You're never going to pull it out again. But instead of putting it back in the closet, just put it into the donation bag. And then you don't even have to go drive your donations anywhere. There are services, well, at least in America, there are services. There's something called pickupplease.org where you can schedule pickups, donation pickups, and they come and they get. If it's something that you can donate to, I mean, if it's something that you would buy in a thrift store, that's what you donate. If you wouldn't buy it in a thrift store, you either throw it away or post it if you're in one of those buy nothing groups or recycle groups or some of these kinds of things where somebody can use this, but it's not some nothing that somebody like would actually buy in a thrift store, like, all your jars or all your empty spools of yarn or things like that that are cluttering your space that you're not using because you stopped crocheting 10 years ago when you took up embroidery, that kind of stuff. There's always a place for that to go. But that's the kind of thing is like you don't want that cluttering up your life now, past hobbies that you're not doing again, because you want to make room for your new hobbies. You don't want all that stuff sitting out because there's nowhere for it to go to be organized and put away. And anything that you have, you want it to be easy to access and easy to put away. Because if it's not easy to put away, it won't get put away. If it's not easy to access, you're not going to take it out and use it anyway. So you might as well not even have it. So think about, are you still climbing ladders or not? If you're not, then anything you store up there is for your kids, not for you, because you're not going to be climbing a ladder to get to it. So they might as well take it now, or if, unless it's, Christmas decorations, and then somebody else will bring those down for you. And by the way, when you put up Christmas decorations this year, if there's stuff that doesn't get put up, chances are you've bought things you like better, or you've moved houses and you don't have room for that anymore. And you're always going to use your favorite stuff. And therefore, the also-rans bless somebody else with. That's the thing. If you think that you're blessing somebody else with because other people are happy to have what you're not using, then you feel better about getting rid of things.
Okay, I just want every listener out there to understand that when I asked you specifically about that one listener, you have just had an aerobic workout because you got so excited and your arms are pointing at the cupboards and they're moving things around on your. It was fabulous to watch. So it's too bad we're not doing video. It was great
I
to
get very
watch.
animated. I get very animated
That's good. No, that's
because
great.
it all makes perfect
Ah, dear.
sense. I give presentations to groups, and so they get to see my my animated hands. And as I talk about things, that every head is always, bouncing up and down because it's a universal truth, and everybody sees themselves in it. And that's what I want people to know. Nobody looks like the reveals on HGTV. Nobody lives like that. That's called staged. That's not organized. That's staged. Staged is what your house looks like before the party starts. But if you're organized, you can get your house to look like that within an hour, so that whenever you have company coming, it only takes you an hour and you don't have to like shove all the piles, in another room, and then never go into that room again because it's too overwhelming because it's f full of stuff. That's the important part. But everybody is the same exact way, and everybody feels bad about the way their house looks. I mean, very few people I know feel good about the way their house looks, and those people usually have a housekeeper. And so I'm telling you, don't wait until your house is organized. Or decluttered or whatever, to have people over. People will jump at the chance to go to somebody else's house. They really will. Everybody wants to see how everybody else lives and feel better about themselves. I'm telling you.
I often say too that if anybody shows up at my door with white gloves on, they're not welcome.
Oh, I could tell you stories. I have a friend, and they're like the odd couple. The guy is like Oscar, and the woman is like Felix, if you know the reference that I'm talking about. Okay. And he's very, very messy, ridiculously messy, and she is so fastidious that if you're sitting at her counter drinking water, And it's a, marble, not marble, it's a granite counter. She's right there with the cloth wiping up your water ring on the granite, even though it's not going to make a mark, it's just wet, as you pick up your glass. She's there wiping it. It makes it so that you feel like you can't put anything down and yet you can't even breathe, because it's just too. So that's not our goal. Our goal is to feel comfortable. The people feel comfortable in your house, that not to be minimal necessarily, unless you like that aesthetic, but I like having things around. I just want them there because I put them there. I arrange them. My company's called Neatly Arranged. So I want things that are there neatly arranged because I put them there because it looks pretty and it makes me happy to see it. And it doesn't take away from the rest of the room. It's not overpowering, and it just makes people smile. That's how I live. And that's how I expect most people like to live. They like their things, and you've collected a lifetime of things. And I'm not telling you to get rid of your lifetime of things. But if you're a world traveler and you started out buying, $3 souvenirs, and then you graduated to buying beautiful art and pottery and whatever on your travels, you don't need the $3 souvenir to remind you that you went to Tahiti. You can keep the nice wood carving. So there are decisions to be made. Everybody has favorites. Keep the best, reduce the rest. That's really the key. And done is better than perfect. My watchword. Done is better than perfect. It doesn't ever have to be perfect. If you don't have a half an hour to sit there and organize your silverware drawer, not that it takes a half an hour, but I'm just telling you, and you have the 5 minutes it takes for the Keurig to heat up your coffee while you're waiting, you can take things out of the drawer that don't belong there and put them back where they belong, or dump them in the donation drawer because they shouldn't have ever been there anyway, or you bought better stuff. I guarantee most people have good stuff and then they have the stuff they've always had. Keep the good stuff, the stuff you've always had. Just because you've had it, just because it was a part of your life, doesn't mean you have to keep it. I tell people, you're not the president. You don't need a presidential library to document every stage of your life. If it means something, it fits your decor, you have the space for it, and it makes you happy to look at it. But if it's going to be locked away in a cabinet somewhere because you don't want to deal with it, well, maybe as you build your decluttering muscles, your decision-making muscles, and you get better at decluttering, now's the time to go look at that closet and make the space for things that mean more to you. Especially maybe you want to take in a roommate, or you need to have a caregiver, or you want to, merge households with a new love. You might as well get ready now, even if you're not moving, get ready now so that when the opportunity comes, it's not overwhelming, that you're still in good health, that you still have the energy, that you're not rushed and you don't feel forced to make decisions, because it takes time, energy, and emotional investment to do that. So just start now, that's all.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about?
Dream about what each space could be in your house. Because when you have a plan for the space, not just I'm going to get rid of things, but I'm turning this back bedroom into my yoga meditation room because it has glorious light and that's where I want to be every morning, then you're way more motivated to move the stuff that doesn't fit that theme out. And the stuff that does fit that theme in. And that's really all you're doing is you want to define a space. Anything that doesn't belong in that space for that use doesn't belong in that space. And then you decide if it belongs somewhere else or if you can let it go. And when you're deciding whether to let something go, don't get caught up in the decision of, Am I buying it? I mean, am I selling it or am I giving it away? And who can I give it away to? And who can I sell it to? Those are four different decisions. All I want you to do is one very binary decision: keep or let go. And if you can't make that decision in 2 seconds, literally 2 seconds, you move on to the next thing. Because if it's going to bog you down thinking about something, you're never going to get through it. And when you get through some quick wins and fill up those donation boxes or whatever, or things that you've decided to let go, and your room gets lighter and starts transforming into something new and exciting, that'll keep you going. And you want to keep going and not get bogged down in the middle. And if you've decided to let something go, and if it's going to donations, put it in your car and get it to donations, or call or schedule the pickup, because the longer it sits around, the more you're going to change your mind, or you're going to forget about it, and it's just going to become more clutter.
So plan that new and exciting life, which I love the title of your book. Improve Your Move, How to Downsize with Ease and Move On to Your Next Adventure. Tell us about the book.
Well, this book actually started as material that didn't get put into the first book. So then,
Which I love. This mess is making me
right.
stress how to organize your home and find
Right.
peace.
So there are chapters that didn't make it into the first book that was for the second book, but also because I wanted to document what I had done for clients. So that it became a handbook. And even then for myself, if I were, because one of the things people get so stressed about when they're moving is they think they're going to forget something because there's so many details. So I wanted to actually get it down on paper for myself. So if I had to do it again, and I
Right.
chances are I'm going to, I wouldn't have to forget anything. And while I'm writing it for myself, I might as well fill in for everybody else. And I put in a little bit about how to pick your next place, because not enough attention is being paid there, especially if your kids are busy finding your next place. I moved somebody into an assisted living space with a closet that the doors didn't close when the hangers were in. It was made wrong. And I can't imagine that whoever was in that space before never complained about it. I mean, it was ridiculous. And so there are things to look at, or, when you go to a house, go at different times of days, different times of weeks. If you're by a school, go at school pickup time and see how it impacts your house. Can you get out and go where you have to get to at 3 o'clock? Or are you going to be stuck because the carpool lane is right in front of your door? That kind of stuff. So, I wanted people to understand how to do that. And then the real estate process, I did a little bit. My family business, my sister, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law are all, and best friends are all brokers, and realtors. So I've been through, and I help people get their home ready to sell. So I wanted to explain that to people too. So the whole process of when you're very first thinking, I may want to move someday, to I actually am out the door and handed over the keys and getting on a plane tomorrow to live with my son in New York. That's all in the book. So you may not need every chapter right now, but at some point you're going to need all kinds of chapters. And there's a chapter about how to clear out a house too. So even if it's not you moving, but you're clearing out your parents' house or somebody else's house, how to do that, because that's as overwhelming as moving yourself. Because it has lots more memories and often done while you're in grief.
Yeah, that's a big one. Where do we find you on the World Wide
I
Web?
am at neatlyarranged.com,
Okay.
and the books are on Amazon and other digital marketplaces, but Amazon is the best place.
Okay.
And
And there's a little bit of social media here, is there?
I do have a Facebook page, but to be honest, I'm very busy and I'm never really on it and posting on it. I will be doing more on social media when I get an assistant, because my business is growing, because now I'm actually selling things on consignment for some of my clients. So if they don't have a full-on estate sale, I may have another client having an estate sale, so I can bring their things there and sell them and put furniture on Facebook and things like that. Anyway, so all of that is coming. And I consult not only in person, so in Los Angeles, but anywhere else you want to fly me or over Zoom or even just your camera, your video camera. So I can consult with you for and get you started or sit with you or tell you step by step or suggest things or whatever by virtual consulting. And you can book all those appointments on my website as well.
Great. Okay. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Yes.
Your CV has a quiet note in it that I'm curious about. It says you were a costumed character at Universal Studios
Yep.
Hollywood. Tell
Well,
us.
not only that, but I was Mickey Mouse too at in New York City.
Oh my goodness.
One of the things that ha that one of the only good things about being 4'11 and a half or 4'11 now, as I've shrunk a little, is you're the right size to be costumed characters like Mickey Mouse and Bart Simpson and the Lorax and Dora the Explorer and who else?
So, have you
So
been
I
all
have
of
been
these?
all of these, yeah. At Universal, at the theme park, that was my midlife crisis when I was 50. I got paid practically nothing. I had a lot of fun, and eventually Bart Simpson's head hurt me. It didn't fit right. I didn't realize, and I had to stop doing it. But that's what I was doing for fun because I'm a performer. I was a musical theater kid, and grew up performing and I still perform. And that seemed like something fun to do. When I lived in New York is when I auditioned for Disney and got the gig being Mickey Mouse in New York for special events. But then I moved to Los Angeles soon after, and I thought I was going to do it earlier in Los Angeles just for fun, and then life happened. And for my midlife crisis, I said, let's go back to doing something that I thought I would do. When I was younger, just to say I've done it. So it fixed me up as a customer.
I'm going to call you on this midlife crisis. When I turned, I think 48, I bought a fun car and I learned to ride a motorcycle. And people would say that, Agnes, are you having a midlife crisis? And I said, there is absolutely no crisis here. I am having
A
a
great time,
great
right?
time. And it seems to me that you should say the
Yeah,
same thing. There's no crisis here. I'm having a
I had
good
little
time.
kids. I had little kids, and I thought they would get a kick out of it. My kids were 6 and 9 at the time, I think, and they did. They had fun, but then it got too much to be a mom and do that at the same time. And I was getting like $10 an hour. It wasn't worth it.
Oh my
But anyway,
goodness.
but yeah. And then at 60, my big milestone for 60 was writing the book, and for 70, I don't even know what's going to be next. But I have goals for every decade, and this is my best decade yet. So I'm having a blast.
Well, after 70 is just fine too. I'll assure you of that. Okay, your website link is in the show notes. All of your links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, have you already downsized or is it something you're thinking about? What's been the biggest challenge? Letting go of possessions, leaving a home full of memories, or deciding what you want your next chapter to look like? I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments. If you have a friend, sibling, parent, neighbor who's talking about simplifying, downsizing, making a move, share this episode with them. Sometimes the first step is simply hearing that you're not alone. If you enjoy conversations about creating your next chapter after 60, whether that's through reinvention, relationships, purpose, or practical life transitions, be sure to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast on your favorite podcast platform. If you'd like to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. Donna Barwald, thank you for being my guest today and reminding us that downsizing isn't simply about getting rid of things. It's about creating space for freedom, for possibility, for your next adventure. I appreciate you sharing both your practical wisdom and your thoughtful perspective and your energy with our listeners. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great rest of the week.
You too.